I'm going to be talking to Fintan Lawler, solicitor with Lawlers and Partners, with Lawler and Partners Solicitors and Taxation Consultants. Hello, Fintan. Good Friday to you.
Good morning, Noel. How's the form? Are you well?
Not too bad at all. Not too bad at all. A bit of change.
Has our sunshine gone for a few days?
Yes. Well, you know, typical coming up to the weekend. What else would you expect?
We did very well, though.
We did very well.
Hopefully, we'll be back soon.
We got a whole week. Isn't that great?
I think it was 2 weeks.
Oh, was it? Okay. My memory's getting shorter. Okay, all our questions, we sort of compiled them because we had quite a lot of different questions. So we decided that we'd sort of keep them in the realms of wills. And there's one particular one I'd like to know the answer to as well. But I'll start with the first one. I have a special needs child. Can you please tell me what special arrangements I should make for her in my will?
Special arrangements I'm going to make for her and will. I suppose it depends really in relation to the mother or father who are asking that question will know best what the special needs child will need.
Mm-hmm.
Is the special needs child capable of managing her own affairs? In which case there doesn't need to be massive deviation from what would ordinarily be in a will for somebody else if she's capable of managing her own affairs. If she's not, well then you probably would need to put together a will appointing two trustees. And what the trustees would do is that they would manage the trust fund on behalf of the special needs child. But obviously the special needs child is going to become an adult at some stage. And that's why I'm asking the question, going, how capable is the person or the mm-hmm. individual, or how capable will they be? Because if they're fairly capable individuals, let's just say that in 10 years' time, they're, I don't know, 24 or 25, they may resent the fact that there's a trust set up for them and that they have to deal with trustees and they can't manage their own affairs mm-hmm. if they're capable. Clearly, if they're not capable of managing their own affairs, they're going to need that. So the parents are best placed to know really what requirements to put in place for the child now, who will be an adult in due course.
Okay.
If there's any doubt about it, they could sit down with the proposed trustees. So I'll take that to be a brother or a sister, as in the child's uncle or aunt, and sit down and say, guys, this is what we're thinking of doing in relation to the special needs child. We're putting together a trust fund. We'd like you to manage the trust fund. However, if you think that she is capable of managing her own affairs, we won't have a difficulty in that eventuality of you handing over the management and control of that to the special needs child, who becomes an adult in due course. And they could kind of put something in the will to exonerate or excuse the trustees at a given moment in time. And they'd probably put a special condition along the lines of, if it is the belief and understanding of the trustees that the special needs child, who is now an adult, can manage her own affairs, then it's an order for them to transfer all of the properties and monies, etc., into the child's name at whatever time they see fit, or something like that. So they could kind of cover that off.
Okay. The second one is an interesting one as well. I will leave my house to my only son, who lives outside Ireland. Is there any way I can avoid him having to pay the inheritance tax, or can I take any steps now that would minimise the tax he would have to pay?
That's a very good question, though, but it's quite a technical question. They probably should look for specialist advice on it. In general terms, the threshold from a parent to a child is 310,000 euros where they're exempt from tax.
Mm-hmm.
After that, they have to pay 33%. So the first question that arises is, are they going to fall into the tax net, or will they be exempt? If they fall into the tax net, well, then obviously you're at 33%. If they're exempt, well, then the issue doesn't arise.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they're living outside Ireland will depend, from a tax point of view, more from where they're domiciled and where they're resident. They may be able to avoid tax here if they're resident somewhere else, but it may be a case that they could get caught for tax where they're resident, depending on the circumstances.
So if they avoid it here,
they might get caught there, or they might still have to take it here because they're spending a certain amount of time here, or they have done, as in, let's just say they're out of the country for the last 6 months,
mm-hmm.
they might not be considered to be resident outside Ireland. They might be living outside Ireland, but they might not be considered to be domiciled outside Ireland. So they'd have to probably get specialist tax advice on that.
Okay. So if they can have proof sort of that they are living in some other country, I don't know, America, Australia, or somewhere like that, do you know of any countries where this exemption would come in, where if the parent is in Ireland, is there any particular countries that you could name, or is it just they'd have to investigate that?
No, I think they'd have to investigate it because it goes on your, where you're domiciled. Mm-hmm. So, and there's certain rules and regulations in relation to it. So, by way of example, and I was watching this recently on the news in relation to Donald Trump, and some people are saying that they're living in America for 15 years, but that they haven't got their papers in order and they're afraid that they're going to be kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of against that backdrop. Are they domiciled in America? Are they resident in America? Are they tax compliant in America? Or where are they tax compliant?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of down to where are they domiciled, how long they're living there, and whether they're paying their taxes there, whether they're meeting their obligations there, and where is their country of residence. So I suppose somebody can be living in the UK for a couple of years and they might not consider themselves a resident there.
Okay.
You know,
yeah, okay.
It's a fairly technical one.
It is, yeah. So it's a specialist. There is a specialist that you'd have to go to get advice on that. Now, the next one is the one I'm interested in. When someone dies with no will and there are no surviving relatives, where does that person's money or estate go?
That's a great question as well. You have good questions this morning, Noel.
Well, I do. So, I was delighted when I saw that because it's something I never thought of myself.
Well, being a solicitor, I would say that nobody should be dying without a will. So the issue shouldn't arise because everybody should make a will and cover themselves off rather than not having a will. However, if they don't have a will, it means that they die intestate. And if they die intestate, there are certain rules under the Succession Act. And what happens is that if somebody dies without making a will, they have various rules in relation to who's next in line.
Mm-hmm.
So the next in line is normally goes a spouse or a civil partner. Is the next person in line. After that, it goes to a child. After that, it goes to a parent. After that, it goes to a brother or a sister. And after that, you're into a more distant relative. Now, I did have this query before in relation to a lady, and she was living around East Wall at the time, and her granny was unwell. And she said to me that it's okay. Her granny has said that she's going to get everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that... everybody in the family knew that because she was living with the granny and looking after the granny, but that the granny hadn't made a will. And I had to explain to the individual, I said, if your granny hasn't made a will, the person entitled to get her estate is her brother and sister,
mm-hmm.
who are still alive. And I said, there's nothing you can do about that insofar as if your granny dies, you can't challenge it. They're the rules. The rules of intestacy say that first is the spouse or civil partner, this person's spouse was dead. Child, she didn't have any child. Next category is parent, her parents were dead. Mm-hmm. And the next category is brother or sister who
sibling,
are going to
yeah.
take it automatically. Now, thankfully, the lady put together a will and made the will. But she didn't make the will despite the fact that the granddaughter was living with her, mm-hmm. believing the fact that she was going to inherit the granny's house. She wouldn't have been able to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, then you're into a complication because it goes directly to the brother and sister in equal shares. It's a house in East Wall, so I can only presume it's worth about 300,000 to 350,000 euros.
Mm-hmm.
In that circumstance, the brother and sister are getting hit with a big tax bill because their threshold to inherit from a brother or sister is only 32,000 euros. That means they can take 32,000 euros from a brother or sister without paying tax,
mm-hmm.
and they pay tax on the balance. So in that circumstance, it would have been a big tax bill.
Yeah, sure.
If they then wanted to give it to the granddaughter, because they believed that that was the intention of their granny and that the granddaughter had been living with her for a number of years and looking after her, they can then give it to her by way of gift. But she is also going to have to pay tax on the gift coming from her uncle and aunt.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and that threshold is also around 32,000 euros. So she's going to get a gift from her uncle and aunt collectively for a house called it worth 350,000 euros. And her threshold is 32,000 and she will have to pay tax on the balance at 33%, which is approximately 100,000 euros.
Okay.
So they're going to have to pay tax, she's going to have to pay tax, everybody's going to have to pay tax.
Okay, I'm just wondering to
very,
an extent...
important.
Yeah, I'm just wondering though, in lots of cases, there's a different sort of aspects to this that I can think of. With people, ordinary lay people, that if they think they haven't got much, you know, say they're in a case, this is the question, and they think they have nothing and they don't make a will, so the kids get together, but if there's no kids, well... I don't know what happens to the stuff. But the second part of it is, if the siblings there say to the grandchild, listen, just carry on the way things are. We say nothing to no one. And all that sort of carry on, and succession comes into it then. Is there legal problems there then if they're found out?
Well, it's not even so much if they're found out. I mean, they will get found out, or it will, you know, they will hit issues. By way of example, if they say continue as you do, and that person wants to take a mortgage on the house, mm-hmm. and they go to look to take a mortgage to put on a conservatory to renovate the house, somebody's going to say, well, where are the title deeds? And are they in your name? And she said, well, no, they're not in my name. They're in my granddad's name or my granny's name. So, well, what happened? I mean, how are you going to get ownership of the house? Mm-hmm. And then we're back to the question, well, is there a will?
Okay.
And if there's not a will, we're back into, you know, was there parents, children, brothers, sisters? And again, as I say, and that's why it was a good example of that person's in full intention was for her granddaughter to get everything.
Okay.
The granddaughter understood that, the granny understood it, the brother and sister understood it. But if she didn't make a will, they would have got all slabbered with tax, so it's important to make a will.
Okay.
But there is a, it is set out, as I say, in the Succession Act. It goes to spouses of a partner and no children, then spouse, children, so on and so forth. It goes as far as brother, sister, then nephew, nieces, and then other relatives. Now, if you can't find any relatives, it will go to the state. The state
okay.
will ultimately get it as you know, the end, last resort.
But that's the bottom.
Somebody will have a relative
yeah.
somewhere.
That's the bottom line, isn't it? It goes. Everything goes to the state. If someone hasn't made it, well, they, you know, everyone living longer now. If sometimes parents are living children 120 years of age, and there's not a single soul around, the state just takes everything. That's it.
They do, but again, you normally find somebody that you can hang a hat on. But my concern, really, in relation to the estate planning, is the cost to the testator or the deceased in relation to tax. Because if you do find a remote nephew or niece, like the threshold is going to be €32,000, all of the rest of it is going to get taxed.
Okay.
So, I mean, all of the rest of it can be a small estate, and a small estate can be get at €200,000 or €300,000, which is an apartment or a house. But, I mean, some people have quite a big estate, because they might have a holiday home, and they might have a car, they might have a second car, they might have one or two paintings, or a bit mm-hmm. of antique, an old dresser, or a nice piano, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And individually, no, there's none of them very expensive. But when you add up all the bits and the pieces and the prize bonds and the few bob in the post office account and the car and the this and the that, all of a sudden you kind of hit €500,000-€600,000. It's fairly easy if you're going to throw a property into the mix.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the thresholds really need to increase. They're far too low, relatively speaking. I mean, I think the nephew and niece should be easily able to inherit a minimum €50,000 from mm-hmm. an uncle or an aunt.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking, Finda, there, like, I mean, it's important to really put on anyone. If there's someone there, and depending on the relative, and there's only 32,000 allowance, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you've got a big tax bill. I'm sure there's lots of people say, listen, I don't exist, I don't want all this, the 32,000 doesn't mean a thing if I have this big, huge tax bill with it. So it makes it quite complicated.
It does, yeah. Mm. People have had that situation before. By way of example, if you inherit a house, you don't want to be taking out a mortgage on the house you've inherited in order to pay the tax bill, and now you have a mortgage to discharge.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, the last one sounds like a funny one, but I think overall, with most of these questions, people should talk to a solicitor, and most primarily, make a will. Whatever else you may do, sit down with a solicitor and make a will. It's imperative. And if it's a husband and wife, both of you do it together. And the last question now is, when my father died, he left a family house to my mother. Then when my mother died, we found the property hadn't been legally put in her name. This caused a lot of difficulty for the family. Can you please ask the solicitor to tell anyone listening what they should do to avoid this difficulty? It was very stressful for us all. Again, no... Sorry.
Well, you know what? No, you
Succession
actually answered
will.
That question before you asked it.
Oh, did I? Okay.
Yes. Which is, go to your solicitor, make a will, get the proper advices, put it in place. So in this circumstance, and this sometimes this happens, so the father here obviously did the will and leaving it to the mother, and that's fine, and everybody got to bed and said, oh yeah, mum got the house, which is expected, and somebody put the will away and put it away for safekeeping, and everybody went about their business.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened then at a later stage was the mammy died, and then they went about where's the title deeds and got the title deeds and realised that dad's name was still on the title deeds. You wouldn't believe how commonplace this is, no. This happens all the time. And particularly, you might remember back in the day when women had to give up work when they got married.
Mm-hmm.
And in that circumstance, if the person was buying the house, it actually only went into the father's name and wouldn't go into the mother's name, because the mother didn't have any earnings.
Mm-hmm.
Stay-at-home mum had given up her work. So very often a property was bought in the sole person's name, as normally the primary earner, the father, set the property into the mum, and then what happens is that when you're looking now to register the house in the mum's name, even though she's passed away, or in her executor's name so that they can sell it, you're missing a link in the chain, because we have the property owned by daddy, it was never owned by mommy, and now mommy's looking to sell it. So the solicitors for the purchaser are going to say, hang on, there's a gap here in the chain. We need to go from dad to mom in order that mom can now sell it through her executors to the ultimate purchasers.
Okay.
So they're now going back to take out a grant to dad's estate in order to transfer the house to mom, and then take out a grant to mom's estate in order to sell it. Mm-hmm. And as I say, it happens quite a lot that people don't realise that there's paperwork to follow the event of a will. It's not a matter of a will just leaving everything to mom. Mm-hmm. That's okay. But what we need to do in order to ensure that that's okay.
Okay, I suppose...
On that point, some people, again, might have personal bank accounts. And whilst it might be in one party's name, again, I'm just going to use the man for this example. The man is naming on the bank account, although they're both operating it as a joint account. In the event that anything happens to the man in that circumstance, the lady in the equation can't go into the bank and say, hi, can I withdraw money? Because they say, well, sorry, you're not the account holder. Mm-hmm. And she says, I know, but it's my husband and he's passed away, and we operate this as a joint account. And so I'm very sorry. The name on the account is Mr. Bloggs. You're definitely not Mr. Bloggs. And if he's dead, we're going to put a freeze on the account. And it can cause a lot of problems if people want to pay for funeral or pay for expenses or memorial cards or anything like that. They can't get access to the account. Mm-hmm. So if there are listeners out there with a single name on an account that they're operating on a joint basis, it's important from an estate planning point of view that they put that account into joint names.
Okay.
Which means then if somebody passes away, that the other person can then operate the property.
Okay. So I suppose, again, as I said at the beginning, to see a solicitor, anything to do with wills at all, but then I suppose in a sense as well, the siblings and children should ask their parents, is the house in both your names? But I'm sure in cases like that, they're afraid of the parents. Is that all you think about, is the parents would be the retort of the parents? Is that all you're thinking about?
I think we need to be very careful in relation to, first of all, not paying too much tax. Mm-hmm. And secondly, in relation to just managing the affairs properly so that there isn't a problem at a later stage. I have another situation that I've met there recently, which is two sisters, neither of them married, one of them has passed away, and now they own the house jointly, and now they're scratching their heads in relation to an unpost account that they had and bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. So it really is that there's an old saying, though, which you're familiar with, which is a stitch in time saves nine, and it's very applicable in estate planning. If you get the stitch in time now, it'll save an awful lot of grief at a later stage.
And believe it or not, with bureaucracy the way it's gone now, I mean, I don't know how long it's been, years ago, like there used to be sort of a free flow of stuff going on with banks and everything, like when there's husbands and wives involved. But even utility bills are very important to get both names on them, because if anything happens to one and there's an inquiry to do with electricity, gas, they just won't talk to you unless your name is on the bill. That's it. So it's as simple as that. And if you just bring it up the line towards your property and taxes, the same rule applies. So just...
Yeah. Well, we do a lot of work in data protection, and that's that whole area that now has got very stringent, and there's new regulation coming in next May. But before, in I suppose the good old days, if you picked up the phone and you explained to somebody, listen, I'm Mr. Bloggs and Mrs. Bloggs did that, oh, that's mm-hmm. okay, that's out of the question now. If you ring up and say, I'm Mr. Bloggs and I want to ask about Mrs. Bloggs, they'll say, mm-hmm. well, we can't tell Mrs. Bloggs anything about you, and we've nothing to say to you.
Yes, yeah, it's all to do with initiative. Okay, if you have any queries, that's Fintan Lawler. He's with Lawler and Partners, solicitors and taxation consultants. And give us your website, Fintan, please.
Yeah, the website is www.lawlerpartners.ie. And I suppose the message from today's programme, Noel, is that people just need to spend a little bit of time just getting their house in order, so that it doesn't cause problems at a later stage, and it also saves them money, because you know how hard it is to gather up money when you're paying tax. Mm-hmm. And it'd be very unfortunate for people who've worked very hard all their lives, paid an awful lot of tax, then pass away and are 6 feet under, and okay. end up paying more tax through their estate and the inheritances that are given out.
Okay. Thanks very much for all that advice, Fintan, and I'm sure, and don't forget, we have the Law Centre here, of course, in the Civic Centre as well, so people can avail of that, just make an appointment. Thanks very much, Fintan. Look forward to talking to you again in a couple of weeks. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Noel. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.